The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. From inside the Beltway on this Thursday morning, I'm Hugh Hewitt, live as Virginia hurdles towards an important vote in a nationally significant election. It would not be if Terry McAuliffe were doing what all of his Democratic buddies thought he would do, which is coast to a double-digit win in what is an essentially a re-election, a second campaign for the old handler and maverick. Now, Terry McAuliffe likes me, so you can trust me, and you can trust Terry. Here's what Terry said about Hugh Hewitt a few years ago.
Terry McAuliffe is, and you should listen to the Hugh Hewitt Show every single day, the greatest radio show in the United States of America.
So listen to me. Terry McAuliffe does not deserve your vote, Virginia. And 1-800-520-1234. We will take calls from Virginia about this upcoming election. Terry McAuliffe said yesterday at a rally that consisted of 24 people, a dozen of whom were media and 6 of whom were cameramen. He is really struggling. It's got no enthusiasm behind his campaign. It's like the Democrats have packed up and gone home already. Terry McAuliffe trotted out the line, which has offended so many Virginia parents. Cut number 17. Excuse me. Cut number 15.
I am sick of them talking about these issues of critical race theory. We do not teach critical race theory here in Virginia. It has never been taught. It is a racist dog whistle. It is pitting parents against parents, parents against teachers, and they're using our children as political pawns, and it has got to stop.
You know, apparently they have no tacticians in the McAuliffe campaign. Apparently their pollsters are stupid and their messaging are stupid. And even if he were to pull this out somehow at the end by magic, we've got an army of poll watchers. There's a giant article in the Washington Post today about how Team Youngkin has trained an army of poll watchers to be everywhere in Virginia. And there are 800,000 early votes with a couple more days for early voting. But it is this. It's Terry McAuliffe saying we don't teach CRT. When parents encounter CRT every day in some strong or diluted form, and more importantly, they encounter COVID shutdowns, COVID quarantines, students wearing masks when they shouldn't be wearing masks. They are encountering big government everywhere instead of local school boards listening to parents. And they are mad, and suburban moms are concerned, and Terry McAuliffe keeps calling them racist. It's not a way to win. By the way, we went back a little bit to 1021. Here's Terry McAuliffe comparing Republicans, apparently, in a conversation with Ed O'Keefe, apparently, to MS-13. Cut 16.
If you win, how are you going to work with those parents who have concerns about how things are being taught in schools across the Commonwealth?
Let's be very clear here. This is all generated by Glenn Youngkin. This is what MS-13, the Republicans used on Governor Northam 4 years ago when he was running. They try to find a divisive tactic.
Okay, so that makes a lot of sense to exactly nobody. We're talking about the Loudoun County parent whose daughter was raped by a boy wearing women's clothing in a bathroom, and then the school board covered it up. We're talking about CRT training, CRT half days, stress days for staff. We're talking about COVID quarantines that go on forever for students who need to be in school. We're talking about a teachers union that shut down most of Virginia schools all last year. We're talking about a Virginia State School Board that said we're not going to teach accelerated math classes before the 11th grade. We're talking about an education system in the grip of a bureaucracy and a union that parents are rebelling against. And Glenn Youngkin hears and will fix on day one. That's why Glenn Youngkin is getting votes from across the state, from all demographics, from all incomes, from all parts of the state, including Northern Virginia. Keep your eye on the Commonwealth of Virginia. Now I want to go, this is going to take a few segments. Merrick Garland went up there to the Senate yesterday to testify about his memo about parents being domestic terrorists when they go to school boards. Ted Cruz started off by just asking him some CRT questions. Cut number 6.
Your son-in-law makes a very substantial sum of money from a company involved in the teaching of critical race theory. Did you seek and receive a decision from an ethics advisor at the Department of Justice before you carried out an action that would have a predictable financial benefit to your son-in-law?
This memorandum is aimed at violence and threats.
I just asked a question. Did you seek
an ethics opinion? It has no predictable
effect. Did you seek an ethics opinion?
It has no predictable.
Did you seek an ethics opinion? Judge, you know how to ask questions and answer them. Did you seek an ethics opinion?
You asked me whether I sought an ethics opinion about something that would have a predictable effect on something. This has no predictable effect in the way that you're talking about.
So if critical race theory is taught in more schools, does your son-in-law make more money?
This memo has nothing.
If critical race theory is taught in more schools, does your son-in-law make more money? Yes or no?
This memorandum has nothing to do with critical race theory.
Will you answer if you sought an ethics
kind
opinion?
Of curriculum?
Will you answer if you sought an ethics
opinion? I am answering the best I can.
Yes or no? Did you seek an ethics opinion?
This memorandum has
did
nothing.
Did you seek an ethics opinion?
This memorandum has nothing to do with
General, are you refusing theory. To answer if you sought an ethics opinion?
I'm telling you that there's no possible.
So you're saying no. Just answer it directly. You know how to answer a question directly. Did you seek an ethics opinion.
I'm telling you that if I thought there was any reason to believe there was a conflict of interest, I would do that. But I cannot.
Why do you refuse to answer the question? Why won't you just say no?
I'm sorry.
You're not going to answer the question?
I'm sorry. Say, ask the question again.
Did you seek an ethics opinion?
I'm saying again, I would seek an ethics opinion.
So no is the answer, correct?
There was a conflict.
Senator, your time is up.
Oh, yeah. I just
that
love
the record
that.
Reflect you're- the attorney.
The Attorney General of the United States can't say no. Why? Because it leads to inquiry. Merrick Garland then tangled with Senator John Kennedy. Never a good idea. John Kennedy's funnier than you are, everybody. Cut number seven.
And in fact, most of the incidents in the letter did not involve threats of violence, did they?
I think that's correct. Most of them did not.
Yeah. And yet you sent this letter calling parents terrorists. Cut number eight. Merrick Garland with Senator Kennedy.
And one of the suggestions made by your U.S. attorney is parents can be prosecuted for repeated telephone calls. Not threatening anyone, just on the theory that repeated telephone calls could be harassment. Really?
Senator, I haven't seen that memorandum. I've tried to express as clearly as I can here.
I heard you, General, but this is one of your U.S. attorneys.
Senator, you're thinking of... Again, I haven't seen...
Isn't that special?
Isn't that special? John Cornyn lands on him next. Senator from Texas, cut 11.
Well, Mr. Attorney General, you've acknowledged that parents have a right, a constitutional right, to be heard on the education of their children in public schools. Can you imagine the sort of intimidation, the sort of bullying impact that a memorandum from the Department of Justice would have, and how that would chill the willingness of parents to exercise their rights under threat of federal prosecution? Did you consider the chilling impact your memorandum would have on parents exercising their constitutional rights?
The only thing this memorandum is about is violence and threats of violence, and it opens with a statement.
But my question is, did you consider the chilling effect this would have on parents' constitutional rights?
To say that the Justice Department is against violence and threats of violence.
Did you consider the chilling effect your memorandum might have on parents exercising their constitutional rights? I think you can answer that yes or no.
What I considered, which I wanted the memorandum.
They got him. They got Ben Sasse threw in a quick extra shot. Cut number 13.
Will you pledge you will report back to this committee with the results of your investigation about how big a threat the American parent class is to school boards in the country?
I will be happy to get a report back to you, but this is not about the American parent
class. I know. It's about the politicization of DOJ, and you decided to submit as a vessel, and you know better.
You know better? You almost were on the Supreme Court. Tom Cotton laid into him about that. We will play more of Merrick Garland. It reminded me of Robert Mueller when Robert Mueller was not ready for prime time. It reminded me of every disastrous appearance. I think Virginia parents are watching this and deciding to get up and go vote early for Glenn Youngkin today, because they got an attorney general and a wildly out of control, hard left Department of Justice prosecuting parents. And they've had it. I think Terry McAuliffe is in great deep trouble because of going after parents. It doesn't work in elections. You should have remembered that. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you found yourself completely befuddled by events in Afghanistan, alarmed about inflation and otherwise uneasy, well, about everything, about Americans standing in the world, about what comes next, then you're feeling like everybody else is, and uncertainty is usually a time that you want to increase your holdings in gold. When I do that, I do it with Birch Gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You can go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. They will send you free information. If you want to roll over a portion of your IRA or your 401k into physical precious metals, Birch Gold is who to do that with. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of happy customers. If you're thinking, I got to get some gold, do it with Birch Gold via HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's Hugh to 474747 or HughGold.com. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour. Hi, Canada. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway live on this Thursday, joined by Florida Senator Rick Scott. Good morning, Senator Scott. How are you?
Good morning, Hugh. It's a great day. Hopefully we'll have another Thursday where the Democrats don't bankrupt the country even worse.
You know, every day it seems like it falls apart a little bit. I imagine they've got duct tape and they're going to put something together, though, right?
Absolutely. I mean, they are absolutely committed to bankrupting this country. Spend every dollar that you might make in the future. I mean, this is taxes, taxes, taxes. Change this into a European socialist model. Bernie Sanders is running the Biden administration right now.
You know, Senator Scott, on the side, I want to talk to you about the Senate races, including the Ohio Senate debate I moderated on Sunday night. But we have seen a bill now targeting a few dozen individuals. That's a bill of attainder. It's specifically prohibited by the Constitution. Has anyone looked around and said, we are barred by the Constitution from targeting individuals?
Yeah, but absolutely. But it doesn't stop the Democrats. I mean, they are absolutely committed to whatever tax they can pass. They don't care whether it's constitutional or not. They want your money. They want everybody's money. They think they can spend your money better than you can. They think they can tell you how to lead your life better than you can. They don't believe in your individual decisions right now. They believe in this is communist China. They want to take our money, tell us how to lead our lives. That's all the Democrats want to do. They're all socialists right now.
Senator Rick Scott is my guest. He's the chair of the National Republican Senatorial Committee, NRSC. I want to get the right Senate. And Senator Scott is indefatigable in recruiting people. So I always ask him, first question, have you got Governor Sununu to commit yet up in New Hampshire to run?
You know, I don't know if Chris is going to run. Do I think he will? Yeah, I think he will. But, you know, we're getting so many good people all around this country running. And Maggie Hassam is going to lose whoever the Republican is. There's a poll up there. Her fave's 33%. Her unfave's 51%. She only won by 1,000 votes 4 years ago. So we're going to win up there.
Well, I think she's going to get completely shattered by whatever tax and spend bill they pass. That she's got to be the one person in the room that's saying, no, no, no,
she's
but I can't say it publicly.
Now, yeah. She's already running an ad trying to build up her face. She's in such bad shape.
Go ahead.
Hugh, did you know that the first ad that Chuck Schumer put up against a Republican was so untrue that we were able to get it taken down? That's hard to do.
Yeah, it is.
He has to lie to come up with something to attack us.
Well, let me go down to Georgia and then up to Ohio. I did an event with Herschel Walker and AM920, The Answer, in Georgia 2 weeks ago. Last Sunday, I was in Ohio with all six serious Republican candidates on the stage at Genoa Church and 1,500 people in attendance, and they had a great civil substantive debate. How do you feel about Georgia and Ohio as you survey the landscape, Senator Scott?
Well, first off, they're Republican states. All right, that's number one. Number two is we have very good candidates. Herschel Walker's running a good race. We've got Gary Black, the ag commissioner down in Georgia. We've got Latham Sadler, and we've got the businessman veteran Kelvin King down in Georgia. Right now, everybody would say Herschel's going to win. He's running a good race. In Ohio, I think it's wide open. I think we've got a lot of great candidates running there. And the Democrats up there have a, you know, they have a contested primary, which is great, and they're going to go way far to the left, which is where they are. So we're going to win in Ohio. We're going to win in Georgia.
Now, talk to me. And by the way, the whole debate is online if people want to see the Ohio Senate debate. And I have a new column in The Washington Post this morning about the Ohio Senate debate and the Ohio Senate race. Talk to me a little bit about Pennsylvania, because if there's one place where I'm not certain that we've shook out a field full of great candidates, it's PA.
Well, Jeff Barton, we've got the businessman Jeff Bartos, Kathy Barnett, Army veteran Sean Parnell. We've got Ambassador to Denmark, Carla Sands. We've got the good people running. And, you know, on their side, you know, they've got, you know, Fetterman, Lieutenant Governor Fetterman, who describes himself as a Democrat socialist, Connor Land. I mean, they're going to have a far left candidate that comes out of theirs. I think we're in great shape there. Now, there's always more people talking about getting to these states, but we have good people across the country running.
Now, I also like Adam Laxalt in Nevada. I've known the former attorney general for a long time. I'm supporting him. I think he's going to be a great nominee. How do you feel about Nevada in an off year with President Biden sinking slowly under the popularity disapproval rating he's got?
Well, this Cortez Masto, the Democrat, is Chuck Schumer. She votes 100% with Chuck Schumer. She only won by 2 percentage points 4 years ago. If you look at now generic ballots, Republicans are beating Democrats around the country. So we've got Attorney General Adam Laxalt in the race. He's running a good race. Captain Sam Brown's in the race. It looks like he's going to run a good race. Businesswoman Sheryl Mendenhall is running. So right now you'd say that Adam Laxalt has the lead. But I think Sam Brown's going to be very aggressive. And I think we're going to end up with a great candidate out of the primary. And we're going to win against Cortez Masto, because she, you know, all you have to do is explain that she is Chuck Schumer. That's who she is. If you vote for her, it's not an independent vote. It's whatever Chuck Schumer says. You know, Cortez Masto says, yes, sir, and she does it.
I am very impressed by Eric Schmidt in Missouri. I am also very impressed by a couple of people in Arizona, and I'm going to go down and probably moderate a Senate debate down there. And then there's one of the states, North Carolina. I have no idea what's going on in North Carolina, Senator Scott. What's going on there?
We got three candidates in on our side, and they're going to go far left. They've got a primary on the Democrat side. So we've got Pat McCrory in. He just put out a poll showing he's continuing to have a sizable lead. But we've got Mark Walker in. Ted Budd's in. Ted Budd was backed by Trump. So we're going to have a good contested primary, and I don't know who's going to win, but we're going to win in North Carolina. They've got a contested primary, and they're going to go far to the left. It's going to be. I mean, this is not where the country is, and that's clearly not where North Carolina is. North Carolina is a state that we should win, and we will win.
Now, the NRSC is primarily a fundraising vehicle and a messaging vehicle. You're very good on the messaging. How is the fundraising going, Senator Rick Scott?
We're doing really well. The first 9 months, we raised nearly $80 million. We've outraised the Democrats all this year. We have way more money in the bank, and we're investing online and picking up. We've already added over 100,000 new online donors through text and email. Whether you like those or not, they do work. Just in September, $5 million online, more than half of our money, over 160,000 individual donations. If you want to donate, it's nrsc.org. And we're doing really well in that. We're focused on getting our message out. We're doing national polling. We just did a suburban poll in the battleground states, and it shows we are winning the suburban vote. We're going to win. We're going to do very well with the Hispanic vote, very well with the suburban vote, and we're going to get to keep the working class voters, and that's going to be our key to winning in November 22.
You know, I read the crosstabs on that poll. Your team sent it to me. It's very impressive. I think that's what's going to power Glenn Youngkin, that coalition of moms and working people, of Latinos, indeed more and more African-Americans. I just think the Democrats have gone over the left edge, and it's going to kill Terry McAuliffe's chances in Virginia. What do you think about the governor's race across the river?
The country doesn't want open borders. They don't want inflation. They don't want $45 trillion worth of federal debt. They don't want to fail to withdraw from Afghanistan. They don't want to defund the police. The public wants to be involved in their schools and their kids' school, and we don't like socialism. Man, Biden just needs to keep talking, because this is all the Democrats and Biden are doing.
Yeah, I'm sorry he's leaving for Europe today, because I I would have preferred he be around in Virginia over the weekend. He's the kind of presidential candidate, presidential presence that ruins the candidates he appears with. Senator Rick Scott, great to talk to you as always. Come back for next month's update. I love hearing these updates. Rick Scott is running.
You. Have a great day.
Thank you, sir. He is running the greatest NRSC effort, just really the greatest NRSC effort. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, Inside the Beltway Live. This is the time of year when I ask you to support the Alliance Defending Freedom. And this is the last week that I ask you to support the Alliance Defending Freedom. And I always bring in the closer, like bringing Mario Rivera from the Yankees to close. Matt Sharp is a senior counsel at the Alliance Defending Freedom. Matt, you put on a tie. It's, you know, it's like 7:30 in the morning. What's wrong with you?
I wanted to get spiffied up for you, Hugh.
Well, you're very spiffied up. What I need you to do is to explain to people that just because we have three justices who are conservatives on the Supreme Court in a 6-3 originalist bent, ADF can't lay down its efforts and they can't stop supporting ADF. Why?
That's exactly right. Well, every day Americans are facing more and more threats to their freedom. So, for example, the biggest one we're seeing right now is Biden administration's threat to impose this nationwide vaccine mandate on employers and nonprofits with more than 100 employees. And ADF is committed that if the Biden administration follows through on that, we're going to challenge it. Because while we may have different views about vaccines, I think we can all agree that the federal government should not be forcing that on employers. So it's threats to freedom like that is why ADF is here.
Now, tell me a little bit, Matt, about where you'll find the client for that, because I have opined. It's unconstitutional. The president has authority over the executive branch and over the military. He can mandate vaccines there. He has no police power. You know that. I know that. I've been teaching the Constitution for 25 years. There is no general police authority in the president to deal with this. Where will you find the plaintiff? Because everyone will be asking you, please help us, ADF. What will you do?
Yeah. You know, we've already gotten lots of calls from small business owners, from nonprofits and others that say, we don't like the federal government coming in and telling us how to operate our business. We don't like them making us do their dirty work for us and tell our employees that they have to get vaccinated or lose their jobs. And so I think there's just a lot of these nonprofits and employers that don't like this federal overreach and that don't like the federal government interfering with how they operate their business.
Now, Alliance Defending Freedom has been around for a long time. Can you explain to the audience why a $100 contribution matters? And if they can do more, do more.
Yeah. Every case we take, whether it's a small demand letter or something that goes all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, we do free of charge. And so that means every $100 donation enables us to take up another matter, to take that case to the next level, to get that precedent that helps ensure freedom for the next generation of Americans.
Now, Matt, you've got so many great lawyers there, Kristen Welker, and you've got Matt Bowman and Jordan Lawrence and David. I mean, I know them all. They come on the show. They talk to me. You got John Birch now, who looks like he's 16, but is nevertheless a former Solicitor General of Michigan. You got all these terrific people. They can't work for free and you don't charge your clients. So where do you get the money?
Yeah, it is 100% donation focused. We are supported by donations, large and small, that enable us to do our case, that enable us to hire the best legal minds in the country and to take the best cases up to the U.S. Supreme Court. Because when you get to the Supreme Court, you don't want your backbenchers. You want the best people up there making the argument, defending our freedoms. And that's what we do. And that's why these donations are so vital to our work.
And at the same time, you're preparing a new generation. This goes over to what Jeff Bendrell has been doing for so long. Jeffrey has been running the Blackstone program. Would you tell people what that is?
Yeah, and I'm a beneficiary of that. Blackstone program, it takes bright legal minds in law school, and we do an internship where we train them on originalism. We train them on what our founding freedoms mean, and then equip them to go out and to be judges, to be attorneys at big law firms, to be defenders of religious liberty. So we're not only bringing the arguments from the outside into the legal system, but we're helping transform it from the inside by training up people that are willing to take the hard jobs, to go in and be government officials to help preserve our freedoms from the inside of the government.
Now, Matt Sharp, let me focus, if I can, on the Merrick Garland testimony in front of the Senate, a lot of which I played earlier on the show today. It was a bad day for the attorney general, but Tom Cotton, I think, spoke for a lot of Americans when he said, thank God you're not on the Supreme Court. What are you going to do to protect the parents who are targeted by the Department of Justice and the National Association of School Board for speaking their minds against ridiculous mandates and against the idea that CRT has a place in the school?
Yeah. ADF is always going to stand with parents that are speaking out on behalf of their kids, that are speaking out at these school board meetings and making sure that this harmful curriculum, this CRT, this gender identity ideology, and the policies that underlie them, policies that result in students sometimes getting hurt by these bad policies. We are going to stand with the right of parents to direct the upbringing of their children, to be involved in their education, and they should never fear speaking out or being labeled as domestic terrorists simply for expressing their opinions at school board meetings.
A lot of these opinions do go to the curriculum being used, which is often anti-Christian because their Christian faith is a faith of egalitarian. You don't see color, you don't see immutable characteristics, you see a child of God. And therefore, a lot of Christian parents are very upset about this. Maybe a lot of Jewish parents, maybe a lot of Muslim parents. I don't know. How do they get to you, Matt? How do they protect their school district if they're under siege by a school board that's been captured by progressives and teachers unions?
Yeah. Well, number one, we hope they'll reach out to us at ADF. They can visit our website, adflegal.org, where they can get more resources on their rights as parents to speak out, their rights as parents to direct the education upbringing of their kids. And then if they have a legal issue, in fact, we've been involved in a lawsuit in Nevada on behalf of parents and a child that were forced to apologize for their whiteness. And we're going to defend those parents and those kids that are being harmed by this curriculum that's being forced on them in schools and make sure that parental rights. So they can visit us at our website, adflegal.org.
I also like to point out to people that ADF doesn't care what the color of anybody is. I met the wonderful fire chief from Atlanta that you folks successfully defended over all those years, an African-American hero. You've represented Jack at Master Pete's Cake Shop, Baronelle in Washington State. Everybody has a home if their problem is the oppression of their First Amendment rights. And how many people has ADF served in the last year?
Oh, thousands and thousands. I mean, every day we're getting hundreds of calls for legal help. And that's why the resources are so vital, because for us to represent the next Baronelle Stutzman or the next Fire Chief Kelvin Cochran, we need the resources to do that. And the ACLU is not standing up for these people. ACLU wasn't there for Baronelle, wasn't there for Jack. ADF was. And that's why we need these resources to be able to take the cases of people whose First Amendment freedoms are being violated.
Now, the biggest problem for any successful group is that people assume that success means you don't need support. And that could not be more wrong. It's why the Metropolitan Museum of Art, one of the most successful institutions in America, has a gala every year, this year with AOC wearing a Soak the Rich dress. ADF doesn't do galas. ADF does asking people directly for their help. Why does it matter if it's only 10? And why can someone who gives $1,000, they ought to be moved to give $1,000, Matt?
Every little bit helps in the cases we do. And we are getting more and more. The age of COVID, we've had more calls coming in of people that are afraid of losing their jobs or churches that haven't been able to meet because of these COVID restrictions. And so we've been needed to hire more people to help take in those calls, more attorneys to help litigate these cases. And so even something as small as $10 helps add up to the overall total that we need to continue to bring these battles, to fight for our freedoms, and to make sure that we are setting precedent that helps every single American out there. So whether it's $10 or $1,000, it matters.
And if you're going to give that amount of money, whatever it is, go over to HughHewitt.com, find the banner at the top. And Matt, if someone wants to become a deep investor in ADF, meaning that they have been persuaded over the years that you really need and deserve significant financial support from a family foundation, from a private charitable foundation, any other, who do they call at ADF? I don't want them to go to the website and give it. Actually, I do want them to go to the website and give it over the HughHewitt.com. But also, big donors who are really committed to the cause need to call someone. Should that be you?
Yeah, have them give me a call and I'll definitely connect. And we've got some great people on our development team that would love to share the vision of ADF with them and help them find the things that we're doing that maybe really move them. I know we have some people that love the work we do in life or that love the work we're doing in college campuses to defend free speech there. Whatever your interest is, we can find a cause at ADF that fits that you can really get excited about. Meet some of our attorneys, meet some of our clients and really get plugged into the work that we're doing here.
So if you want to give the widow's mite, go to HughHewitt.com. If you want to give $1,000 or $5,000, go to HughHewitt.com. If you really want to become one of the people that keep ADF through the dry spots, then get a hold of Matt Sharp. Matt, thank you for joining me, for putting on the tie. I'm very impressed with your putting on the tie this morning. And go Alliance Defending Freedom. It's great to see you, Matt.
You too. Thanks to you.
Time to remind you of ReliefFactor.com. I took it in the first hour, though I didn't take it on the air. I had nothing to drink, nothing at all. I'd run out of coffee. I didn't have any water, nothing at all. So I don't drink it dry. But you don't need much water to get your ReliefFactor.com down, because the four pills that come in every pack, the Icarin, the Curcumin, the Resveratrol, and the Omega, all the natural anti-inflammatories that are out there that work in combination with your body's immunity system, put you back on the road, moving around, getting going, get your miles in, run through airports, swim through laps, do whatever you need to do to stay active. I'm against playing basketball over the age of 40. That's my one rule. Don't do that. Your Achilles does not like that. But ReliefFactor.com will help you do everything else, whether it's rowing, sailing, scouting, whether it's, and by scouting, I mean if you're a scout dad or a scout mom and you have to go out and sleep on the dirt, something I think I did once and I regretted it. Don't ever go on a camping trip without your ReliefFactor.com. I say put it in your car for your commutes, but never leave home without it. Jim Talent is here next to talk about the Virginia Senate race and the Chinese arms race. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt, joined by former Missouri Senator Jim Talent, now with the Bipartisan Policy Center. And I normally talk defense with Jim Talent, but today I want to talk politics with him. Senator, how many different elections were you a participant in?
I ran 11 times.
Okay, so I think, what are you, 9 for 11?
9 for 11, you remembered, right?
Yep, very, very good record. So we've got a race across the river from the Capitol in Virginia between Glenn Youngkin and Terry McAuliffe. I'm sure you know Terry. And right now they're talking about Glenn Youngkin's agenda. Terry looks, you know, he's in empty rooms with little crowds. He's flailing. The president went over there and he got about 500 people to show up. What do you make of that race? As a former candidate who has both won a lot and lost a couple of times, what do you think's going on?
Yeah, there's a couple of questions you always want to ask at the end of the race. So what issues, what messages are being talked about? It's what they used to call the seen, read, and heard. What are people talking about going into the election? And I think that's very favorable for Youngkin. And then the second question is who has the momentum going in? Because if a race is close, the side with the momentum is usually the one that wins. So I think people are right. I mean, if I was a betting man and I put money on this, I'd bet on Youngkin. But, you know, it's very close, and people need to turn out. I mean, obviously, if they haven't voted already.
You know, I remember when Matt Bevin won an unexpected victory in Kentucky, and the polls had him 5 behind, and he won by 5. It was something like a double-digit swing between the polls. I think Youngkin sounded so optimistic yesterday when Glenn Youngkin appeared on the show, and Terry McAuliffe just looks betwixt and between. Now, the key question to me is this this cryptic message from Donald Trump last night that he'll be seeing voters in Virginia. Democrats seized on this. And my initial response to someone who told me about it was, if Democrats are counting on a Donald Trump visit to Virginia to swing an election to them, they're in really bad shape. Do you share that sentiment?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. I also think, you mentioned my career. I had a little different view of voters than a lot of political professionals. Okay, so I think the number one thing in their mind is, how is this going to affect me and my family and the things that I care about? And that's why I think this whole education issue is so radioactive for them, because it reaches into people's families in ways that they can understand, and including people who don't normally follow politics day to day the way we do in our world. I just think that's very, very difficult for them. I tend to agree with what Rick Scott said. I think the cycle looks very good for Republicans for a lot of reasons. And, you know, he ticked them off, the border, inflation. I mean, it's just one thing after another. And it's traceable in most cases to the policy of the Biden administration. So, yeah, I mean, I tend to keep my hopes down. You know what I mean? So I'm not disappointed, but I feel pretty good about it.
So I want to go to something you won't feel good about, which is a missile gap, a real missile gap. General Milley acknowledged it yesterday. Do you think the American people are internalizing what it means?
No, not fully, because it's not being explained at the highest strategic level to them. So what the Chinese want to do, and we had a chapter on this in the China Commission report last year. Okay, so this is what they want. They want us to recognize that the South and East China Seas are their territorial waters. They want us to abandon our treaty alliances. They want to control trade, movement, and travel in those waters and in East Asia and in general. They want to constrain us from any criticism of them. And they're developing the power very deliberately to punish the American homeland if we resist any of this. Now, not just military power, also economic, diplomatically, and in other ways. This is a very definite and rather open agenda that they have. And so you have to look at things like hypersonics in that context. We have to decide whether we're going to insist on our rights and our security as a nation, and whether we're going to prepare to resist this and deter them. That's the context.
Now, Senator, last night, the Fetching Mrs. Hewitt and I resumed watching The Americans, the story of Soviet sleeper agents in the United States in the 80s. I was part of that effort to find and monitor them at the Department of Justice for Bill Smith and Ed Meese. And I didn't like it. It was too much of a flashback. But last night I found myself thinking, the Soviets were that aggressive and that good at it in the 80s. How good are the Chinese and the Iranians today? Does that bother you?
Yeah, that's one of the tools they use. They're very aggressive. Now, people disagree about how good they are at it, but they're definitely penetrating really every level and aspect of American society with their message and trying to control through different means different centers of influence. And they have a lot of money they throw around to do it. And you can look at particular places and see what they're doing. So, yeah, they have a whole United Front Work Department, hundreds of thousands of people. That's officially what they do. But it's, yeah.
What about espionage? Do you think they do the same things that the Russians used to do, the dead drops, that sort of stuff, turning people?
Yes, they do. And that's one aspect of it. I mean, outright illegality. But there's a whole series of domains in which they are trying to control what we see and what we think about them.
People should be aware of this. I'm going to talk with Jim Talent about that in the weeks ahead. They should be aware that when you're watching The Americans, you're looking at like an ancient version of what the modern espionage games are like. Jim Talent on Twitter by that name, at Jim Talent. I'll be back in the third hour, America. Stay tuned to the Thursday edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. I'm Hugh Hewitt, live inside the Beltway, joined by Mike Gibbons. Mike and I were together on Sunday night in Columbus, Ohio, along with Aaron Baer of the Center for Christian Virtue, 1,500 other people and five other Senate candidates. We had the first major debate of the Ohio Senate campaign in 2022. And Mike Gibbons, who I had not met before, struck me as an avuncular, wonderful, aw-shucks sort of guy. He also happens to be a very sharp investment banker. And he joins me for the first time on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hello, Mike. Good morning. Good to talk to you again in 1 week.
Good to talk to you, Hugh.
Tell me what you thought about Sunday night.
Well, you know, you don't really have a chance to inform everybody about where you came from and what you are and what you believe in because of the, you know, just the circumstances. And hopefully over the next 6 months, I'll be able to do that with the Ohio voter.
Yeah, 75-second answers are not when I invite people to give their bio. That's when I have them on the radios. So we've got lots of people in Cleveland listening right now, lots of people in Columbus, a lot of people in Hamilton and Dayton. I always mention that I want my law school roommate, Tim Butler, to be returned to the Loveland City Council. But then I turn to the Senate race. Tell me, Mike Gibbons, tell your story about to the voters of Ohio and to the people of the country who are interested in keeping the Senate under Republican control. That means we need to nominate someone who will win for the retiring Rob Portman.
Well, I started out in Cleveland, Ohio. My dad was a high school science teacher and a wrestling coach. And we had six people in the family, and he always had two jobs. We lived, until I got to high school and found out that not everybody pushed their mother's car to start it, I didn't realize we didn't have a lot. But I was born in the top of a double house on West 77th in the inner city of Cleveland, and then we moved to Parma, Ohio, which is a working class suburb. Great place to grow up. I lived in a traditional American family and you know, learned the what my parents wanted me to learn.
Did you go to Padua Catholic High School?
No, I went to St. Ignatius.
Okay. Oh, you're one of those people. Well, I went over and did a fundraiser for Padua for my friend David DeVogno, and I really, really enjoy Parma. For a Warren guy to say that, that's a lot.
I do, too. In fact, we're going to spend a lot of time there. Parma, believe it or not, even though you don't think of it as a major city, it's the seventh biggest city in Ohio.
Oh, yeah. And,
We're going to do a bit of campaigning there.
So, Mike, you get out of high school. What do you do?
Go off to college. In fact, I probably should tell you, I had a paper route. I worked in a greenhouse. I worked on a factory floor down in the Cleveland Flats. And I really got into what I thought I was going to end up doing with my life, which was concrete construction. And I did that all through college. I ended up at a little school in Ohio called Kenyon College. And studied economics and political science there. And
Gambier is well known to all of us who love Ohio. I don't know if it's as left wing as Oberlin, where my dad and brother went, but it was Kenyon might be heading the woke way. I'm not sure.
Well, it is, but I can tell you when I was there, I had a double major. It was a pretty rigorous education, and my dad was a coach, and I largely chose. Someplace where I could actually not only go to class but participate in sports, and that's what I did, and it was an important part of my life. If you noticed our campaign advertisements, we're using football as a metaphor. That was my favorite sport. I earned a scholarship to business school, and it was kind of an interesting thing because I thought I was going to law school. I'd gotten into some pretty good law schools, and at that point, just couldn't afford it. They didn't have the programs they do now as far as lending and whatnot that where you could, earn your way into law school. So I went to business school and got an internship with a company. And you may know this company, too, McDonald & Company in Cleveland.
Yep.
And was very well treated there and spent 10 years at that firm. And another 4 years commuting to another job. We were a partnership. I loved it. It was like a big family. And then we went public. It changed everything. And I went off kind of seeking my dream of being a partner. I was a partner in the firm when I left, but I was the youngest partner. And we kind of got locked in with the public offering. And I decided I wanted to find a similar environment to the place I started in. But then came back to Cleveland and started a firm kind of with a desk and a phone. And that firm has now grown to be one of the larger middle market firms in America, one of the better known middle market firms. And we do mergers and acquisitions, large fundraisings, restructurings, that sort of thing. And
you're kind of a middle class investment banker. I just think that's terrific, Mike Gibbons. I didn't know that until Sunday night, but you have the avuncular approach of a booster and the expertise of a high-end investment banker. How's that play in Ohio?
Well, so far it seems to be playing pretty well. I remember where I came from, and I think that's important. I believe in the American dream is still available to those that want to work hard enough, and it certainly was for me.
Are you going to go to the Steelers game this weekend when the Browns have them at First Energy?
No, I'm not.
Mike.
As you may, actually, I'm going to take my grandson to our high school game on Friday night.
Well, that's a better excuse. That's
playoffs,
a better game.
But as you know, I have some family history with the Browns, and I go to a lot of the games or had in the past, but. With the schedule we have with campaigning, there's just no time to do that sort of thing right now.
Now, I got to ask you about that debate that we had on Sunday night. It does move at 30-second questions, 75-second answers. Do you feel that all of you are supportive of Rob Portman and all of you are supportive of Donald Trump? Is that basically where all six of you are?
Well, I would say that the majority of us differentiate ourselves from Rob Portman. I think I may have even said it in our session there, that I think he was a class act, but I would not have always voted the way Rob did.
Right. I got that.
If you remember in the Obamacare, the lead up to the, shutting down Obamacare, there was a lot of, particularly in the conservative media, that he wasn't supportive of that. And I guess you never know the circumstances. I've been somewhat critical of the party and not coming up with an alternative to it. I have spent a good bit of time, looking at healthcare my whole career, from the investment banking side, and I've owned a couple of healthcare companies at times. And I think there's a solution to this that nobody's really brought up. I think this country got where it is with free market capitalism, and we've taken the method that used to make this country the richest and greatest country in the history of the world, and we've kind of rejected it and stuck government right in the middle of everything. And that's, prices are never going to go down as long as the government is setting prices.
Amen. Now, Mike Gibbons, I noted in a Washington Post column today, there are three sets of two candidates. Jane Timken and Matt Dolan they're kind of Portman Republicans. You've got Josh Mandel and J.D. Vance over there on the far right. In the middle there are Bernie Marino and the businessmen who are, like the Mike Brauns and Ron Johnson of the Senate. They're businessmen who come in. Which appeals the most in a year of backlash against the overreach of the socialists in Congress?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't call J.D. Vance to the right of me. I haven't quite figured out what he, where he sits on the political spectrum, the ideological spectrum. And I would say that I'm as equally as conservative as Josh Mandel. I just express it a little differently. Now, I'm a philosophical conservative. I'm a constitutional conservative without apology. I believe that the U.S. Constitution is the greatest governing document in the history of the world. And it's the arrogance we're seeing from the left in attempting to just ignore it, I can't handle it, and I won't handle it.
Well and truly said. Mike Gibbons, good to have you. I look forward to having you back every round of candidates. Go find him on Twitter, at Mike Gibbons, O-H. Go Browns, and I imagine you're taking your poor grandson to see St. Ignatius. If Kennedy was in the playoffs, that would be worth going to. But Mike Gibbons, good to talk to you, my friend. Be well. Don't go anywhere, America. Coming right back, 1-800-520-1234. If you haven't voted yet in Virginia, get out and vote early for Glenn Youngkin. Early voting available till Saturday. Go do it today or tomorrow. Do not get left behind. The early vote is huge. It's important for Republicans to dominate, as they're dominating Terry McAuliffe in attendance and enthusiasm and everything. In everything. Glenn Youngkin is pulling away, and I think it's great. Don't go anywhere. It's the Hugh Hewitt Show. Welcome back, America. It's Hugh Hewitt. Unusual time, but I'm happy to welcome back Ambassador Michael Oren, former ambassador of Israel to the United States, former deputy minister in the last government. And Michael Oren joins us from Israel this morning, and I'm glad you did, because the headline I've got in front of me is that Hamas has sentenced six Gazans to death, alleging they're Israeli informants. And so, Dr. Oren, I just want to begin, before we move over to Iran, by asking you, Gaza justice is an oxymoron, isn't it?
It is definitely an oxymoron. And I don't even know why that's headline. That happens all the time.
That's apparently the case.
I'm surprised at the word sentence. When do they ever sentence people? They take them out and shoot them.
Well, and this does cause me some alarm that the Times of Israel is out there alleging there was some kind of a trial. I don't think they have a military trial, right? And a military trial is anything that Hamas says it is.
Yeah, pretty much. Listen, there's not a lot of news going on here, so, they're scraping the bottom of the barrel.
Let's go to the news that is going on, which is the announcement that Iran is expected back at the bargaining table, which is the worst possible announcement, because that means Team Biden is ready to cave.
Well, it's based on a remark made by a deputy minister. I don't know how much credence you can lend to that, But we have to be prepared for everything. I think it's more importantly that Israeli leaders have been around the world today. Prime Minister Bennett is in Switzerland, and the message is always that Israel cannot coexist with Iran that has a threshold capacity, and that Israel will act. Now, the Israeli press has been putting out notices from the IDF saying that there's now intensive training so that Israel will be ready to strike within 1 year. I'm not so sure we have 1 year, Hugh. I think that's being very optimistic, and I wonder what the purpose of those reports are.
Well, within 1 year could be tomorrow, right? And I saw those stories on the Israeli Air Force, the IAF, conducting training missions. I assume the IAF is kind of always conducting training missions. Don't you think that's kind of socializing the idea for the world?
But it's good. It gets it out there. It's not bad. And if the Iranians believe that it's going to happen in the year, that's good, too, without going into too much details. But the bottom line is Israel cannot exist with that threshold capacity. I believe the message from certainly from the Obama administration and the Biden administration is the United States can coexist with a threshold capacity. And therein lies all the difference. And it's very important the world knows that we will act to defend ourselves against that threshold capacity.
Now, that issue is not up to the Biden administration to decide. Israel's a sovereign state, and it has to do under Article, I think it's 51, you were the UN guy, you have the right to self-defense, don't you? And we know what the Iranians have said. We know what they could do with a nuclear weapon. And that is the preemptive sort of strike you launched on Iraq when the Saddam Hussein made his first lurch for it. Very successful. What is the degree of difficulty compared to that raid in 83, Dr. Warren, with one in Iran in 2022?
Well, empirically, there have been two military operations to interdict military nuclear sites in the Middle East, one in Syria, 2007, and in Iraq in 1981. Both have been successful. All the doomsday predictions that said that these operations would actually expedite the nuclear programs have been disproven. But having said all that, this is a much more difficult operation. First of all, the Baghdad reactor, the Syrian reactor were in one place. It was one facility. The Iranian program is an archipelago. Iran is many times the size of these countries. It's huge, and it's much further away. And I'm not revealing any military secrets by saying that Israel does not have strategic bombers. We have fighter bombers that would have to be refueled.
But that means that it would help to have the United States cooperation in a mission. But if you tell the United States, won't they tell the Iranians, Team Biden?
Well, you know, Israel's position going back now well over 10 years is that that America can do this without any fear of retaliation because these bombers bomb from 50,000 feet in the air, these strategic bombers. Iranians don't even have an air force. And this notion that somehow Iran's going to make war against the United States is ridiculous. They can retaliate with terror, but they can always retaliate with terror. They're retaliating with terror right now, and America hasn't even done anything. They just shot at an American base in Syria the other day, didn't they? You know, what
yes,
Americans didn't deserve that one?
Yes,
and it's okay. They're doing it anyway. I don't think anything going to be fearful in that way, though there are people in Congress who will put out that false dichotomy that either it's diplomacy or war. It's not. It's either diplomacy or harder diplomacy with a verifiable military threat on the table. And Israel's position, and this is not my position, it's been Israeli leaders have been telling American leaders now for over a decade, you know, a couple of hours of your activity, of your Air Force could wipe away the stains of whatever you accomplished or failed to accomplish in Afghanistan and Iraq over 20 years. So that's been an Israeli position. I don't think it's going to happen. I think that the administration remains deeply opposed to this. I think the American people are not particularly supportive of it. Majority of American people, correct me if I'm wrong, were supportive of the withdrawal from Afghanistan. America is tired of these conflicts in the Middle East. But okay, the question is, will the United States support us? And that's a very big question, because in most of our recent engagements with Hamas and Hezbollah back in 2006, we've had to go to the United States for resupply of some very essential forms of ammunition. In these wars, our soldiers expend ammunition at a very alarming rate. And so there's ammunition that's pre-stationed in the United States, in Israel, American ammunition that's pre-deposited in America that we can access during times of crisis. And that would be very, very important for us. Just as a footnote, in 2014, during the war with Gaza, we requested some of those vital forms of ammunition, and President Obama said no.
Let me also remind people that the Biden State Department is attempting to open a consulate in Jerusalem for Palestinians. That makes no sense to me. I don't know why they're going to try and upend the Abraham Accords, which it would be a blow to the Abraham Accords. What is the story on that story, Michael Oren?
Well, they're saying that this consulate existed for many, many years. It did. And it was during the Trump administration that that consulate was moved under the aegis of the U.S. Embassy to Israel, which was moved to Jerusalem. It was always reported that that consulate always reported directly to the State Department, Hugh. And if you looked on the website of that consulate, there wasn't a word in Hebrew. It was all in English and Arabic. There wasn't any reference to the Jews in the city, certainly not to Jerusalem being Israel's capital. I complained to American Jewish organizations, do something about it. It's anti-Semitic. And no one would take on the State Department. It was pretty awful. And, you know, they want to go back to this policy. I think that Israel has to resist it by all, you know, logical means, understanding that there'll be a price to any resistance. But keep in mind, this is a very important point. The American position prior, say, to 2018 was that that was inapplicable. It was prejudicial and it was anti-Semitic. And do I have time to explain all three of those?
Yes, you do. We have a good segment.
Okay, so inexplicable means that inapplicable means you could not tell the majority of Jews in Jerusalem who live beyond what was once known as the 1967 lines. That no one knows what those lines are anymore. To say to them that they can't build in those neighborhoods, just it can't be done. No Israeli government would ever could ever abide by doing that. Even a very left wing government couldn't do that. It was inapplicable. It was prejudicial because it's basically saying that one population in the city of Jerusalem cannot build in certain neighborhoods, but another population could build in any neighborhoods and even build illegally. And if the authorities try to take down those illegal buildings, they'd be accused of illegal demolitions. And anti-Semitic. Why anti-Semitic? Because in what country in the United States does the government say that Jews can't live in certain neighborhoods? What do you say? Yep. Jews can't live in the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Or in the Upper East Side of Manhattan. That'd be anti-Semitic, but they're saying this about Jerusalem.
Right.
And not just about any city. They're saying about Israel's capital for 3,000 years, which is mentioned 684 times in the Bible, not just any country, any city. So, and I would say this in the State Department all the time, just what I'm telling you right now. It's inapplicable, prejudicial, and anti-Semitic. And so, we cannot go back to that policy. We must not.
But try and do a mind meld, Michael Oren. You've been fighting these wars for a long time. You're an American first, then you became an Israeli. You're an Israeli first now. You're an Israeli citizen, but you understand Americans. Why would the Biden administration and the Biden State Department revert to a policy that has no upside? None.
I can't. I think it has to do with politics. It has to do with the Democratic Party. They want to see them do something for the Palestinians. It's entirely symbolic. It's not going to do anything substantive for the Palestinians. It will certainly hurt the current Israeli government. I don't know if it will be able to cohere with that. Half the government has said that they will not agree to this the reopening under any condition. I think they're trying to find some type of compromise to set up a committee to discuss various ways around it. But the bottom line is that a reopening of that consulate is a return to that previous inapplicable, prejudicial, and anti-Semitic policy of dividing the city of Jerusalem and saying where Jews can and cannot live.
And well,
imagine if Israel came along and said, listen, we're going to open up a consulate in southeast Washington, D.C., and it's only going to serve the population of southeast, and it's not going to recognize American sovereignty over Washington or recognize Washington as America's united capital. How do you think Americans how do you think that would play in your country?
Yeah, it wouldn't happen. My last question. Israel has traditionally had a very loud and very aggressive group of Americans, including me, to lobby for them and to announce the positions and to push for a pro-Israel point of view. I don't see that on this issue. Is it dormant? Are people afraid of Team Biden? What's going on? Where are the friends of Israel in the United States?
I thought there was a moving in the Senate now and in Congress to oppose it. It's all Republicans, albeit, and they probably won't have a chance of passing, but the voices are being raised and the marker is set down. Listen, it's kind of a violation of American law because back in the 1990s, Congress passed a law calling for the United States to recognize Israel as Jerusalem as Israel's united capital. And it's kind of a backtracking on that law as well. It took so many years to get that law actually implemented. I think it would be very, very harmful. I'm strongly in favor of Israel resisting it, albeit not at every price. It's important to know that if you're going to take on the United States, you're going to pay a price for it. But to stand on our right to have our capital, our united capital, not have a foreign country in America, even though it's our great ally, is a foreign country come in and say, okay, we're going to have a separate consulate for a separate population in your capital.
Again, 100% agree. I think the American public would be in almost unanimous agreement with you, not the far left, but the American public. Dr. Michael Oren, former ambassador to the United States. Follow him at Dr. Michael Oren on Twitter. Thank you, doctor. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway. Until 2016, I lived in California's 45th congressional district, ably represented during my 26 years there, first by Christopher Cox, then by Congressman John Campbell, a dear friend and frequent guest on this show, then by the wonderful Mimi Walters. And then out of nowhere comes this left-wing law professor from UCI, Katie Porter, to seize control of the 45th district. Well, now there's a candidate arising, Sean Collins, who's going to give her a run for her money. And I welcome him for the first time on the program. Sean, welcome. Good to have you.
Hey, thank you, Hugh. Thank you for having me on the show.
Well, you're a high-class lawyer. You're doing very well in Orange County. Why are you running against Katie Porter? She's going to have more money than God. The leftists are completely in favor of her, and she might have redistricting gerrymandering going in her favor.
Well, that's the exact reason why we need somebody to run against her. So I live in the 45th Congressional District. So when I got off of active duty in the military back in 2013, I intentionally decided to live in Orange County because I wanted to live around conservative Republicans. And so my first job out of the Navy was actually up in L.A., and I decided I wanted to commute 2 hours so I could live in an area where I could raise my family in an area where there were other conservative like-minded Republicans. And at the time, Mimi Walters was my representative. So much to my chagrin, in 2018, when Katie Porter won the seat, you know, that was part of that blue wave, and that's when things started to turn for us down there in Orange County. And so the fact that she has all of that money is indicative of the fact that Democrats are trying to force more and more far-left liberal policies on us down in Orange County. Which
now, the 45th Congressional District, it's not a left-wing place. It has a left-wing law school, a left-wing college and university in it, but it is center-right. And so, Sean, how are you appealing to them? First of all, give a little bio and your website for people who are interested in helping you out.
Yeah, so as far as me, I can appeal to them because, I come from humble means. I grew up in a low-income African-American neighborhood in Dallas. I worked my butt off to achieve the life that I currently have here in Orange County. So I know what it means to work hard. I know what it means to build a career. And so when you have a left-wing politician like Katie Porter, who is completely out of touch with the constituents in Orange County, who's pushing for $3.5 trillion stimulus bills, while we have a supply chain shortage that's right off of her coastline, she's passing policies and doing things that are causing more inflation, making things more expensive for the families that live down in Orange County. She's completely out of touch with reality.
So in terms of getting organized early, what's the website for Sean Collins for Congress?
So it's SeanCollinsForCA.com, SeanCollinsForCA.com. That's where you can go to find out more about me, what my platform is, and why I'm the right candidate for this district, why my policies.
This is an S-H-W-N, Sean Collins.
S-H-A-W-N Collins for CA.com.
So in terms of getting early response, how's it working? Is it connecting with OC? Are you over in Newport Beach? Are you in Irvine? I don't even know where the district's lines are going to end up. They might try and carve you out of it, Sean. They are Democrats.
Yeah, they may try to carve me out of it, but they're not going to do that. I'm a fighter, and I'm standing up for Orange County. Look, my entire family lives in the district. My in-laws, my parents, my wife, she grew up in Irvine. She went to Irvine High School. She went to the University of California, Irvine. And we're all watching this district being pulled further and further to the left by Katie Porter. And when I say that, you don't have to look any further than her voting record to know that she's out of touch with, the people that are right there in the center in the 45th Congressional District. She's voting with Nancy Pelosi almost 100% of the time. She's voting with AOC 92% of the time. She goes around bragging about the fact that Elizabeth Warren is her mentor. She's been attacking Senator Sinema and the other senator from
Manchin.
Yep. She's been attacking them for being centrist. Go online, look at her interviews on CNN, look at her interviews on MSNBC. She's attacking them for being centrist, for trying to do things that are actually being positive things for people in her district.
Well, we are going to have a red wave, and we're going to need Republican candidates who can surf it, who are, I believe you're a combat veteran of Afghanistan. Am I right, Sean?
I am. I'm an Afghan combat veteran, and that's another thing. So you need Afghan combat veterans. You need veterans, period, in Congress. And the reason why you need veterans in Congress is because it gives you perspective. So Katie Porter has no problem pulling out her whiteboard or getting on her Twitter feed to attack corporations. But while we have Americans stranded in Afghanistan, you didn't hear a word from her.
We still have 464 Americans in Afghanistan. It's remarkable.
Exactly. There's 464 Americans still in Afghanistan. She should write that on her whiteboard. She should post that on her Twitter feed so that the world will know about that. But instead, she wants to talk about CEO salaries. She wants to talk about, you know, she wants to attack corporations, the corporations that provide jobs for her constituents. That's what she would rather prioritize.
Keep coming back. We got a year to the election. I think the red tide is flowing in your direction. Sean Collins for CA.com, S-H-A-W-N. Sean Collins for CA.com. If you want to invest in the red wave, go invest in Sean Collins for California.com. Good to talk to you, Sean. I'll see you on one of my visits back to the old homeland. 27 years of my life spent there in the 45th, and all of them were represented by serious Republicans. Time to send Katie Porter back to the hyper-liberal UCI law school from whence she came. I'll be right back, America, tomorrow. Don't forget the Alliance Defending Freedom. Don't forget that we have our Culture Warrior of the Year nomination process is open. You have to go to HughHewitt.com to find that. My website search engine is over there as well. And a promise to you to be back tomorrow on the next Hugh Hewitt Show.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never before seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to salemnow.com. Salemnow.com.